At what point does the world say enough? What is the life expectancy of diplomacy?
North Korea steps back from threatening Guam. It's Wednesday, August 16th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Guam reacts to easing tensions. The United States and China reach a military agreement. A secret trial for a prominent rights activist. Potential life near Earth and remembering Elvis. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As a new Chinese import ban of North Korean exports takes effect, North Korea and the United States appeared to step back from heightened tensions over Pyongyang's threat to launch more missiles, this time in waters near the U.S. Pacific Island territory of Guam. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said Tuesday he would watch the, quote, foolish and stupid conduct of the Yankees a little while longer before ordering further missile tests. Writing in the Wall Street Journal Monday, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson again insisted they want a diplomatic solution and have no interest in regime change in the North, reunification, or inflicting harm on the long-suffering North Korean people. They urged China to show regional leadership and exercise its decisive diplomatic and economic leverage over North Korea. Beijing said beginning yesterday it would ban North Korean exports of coal, iron, iron ore, and seafood as part of sanctions imposed following adoption of the latest UN Security Council resolution. But Tufts University Korea analyst Sung Yoon Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty the Chinese announcement will likely not matter much.
China is following through in so much as that China is going through the charade of faithfully implementing UN Security Council resolutions, the latest one. Even if China were to cut down on the import of seafood from North Korea or iron and iron ore, I don't think we'll see any change in North Korean behavior anytime soon. I think China will make some gestures, cut down, scale back on the import of seafood and iron, but there's really no way to verify, monitor these things, these human economic activities. So I don't think this is groundbreaking news.
This comes as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Chief Jim Mattis, in a joint opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal Monday, called on China to take advantage of what they called the unparalleled opportunity to assert its influence on Pyongyang. If China wishes to play a more active role in securing regional peace and stability, from which all of us, especially China, derives its great benefit, it must make the decision to exercise its decisive diplomatic and economic leverage over North Korea.
Well, it's reminiscent of the kind of futile moral suasion that we've seen from previous U.S. administrations. During the Bush administration, the Treasury Secretary spoke of China being, quote, a responsible stakeholder. And during the Obama administration, we know that the former Secretary of State, Kerry, visited China several times and met with high-ranking officials and exhorted the Chinese to do the right thing, to act like a great power. All these messages are, of course, valid, but they will largely fall on deaf ears in China because fundamentally China has national interests in the Korean Peninsula that really don't line up, that don't comport with the national interests of the United States and the world at large.
Sung Yoon Lee, there's apparently a ninth UN Security Council resolution that's being considered. The U.S. could tighten the global economic noose on the North by pushing for further sanctions targeting Pyongyang's textile exports and supplies of oil to the government. How significant could that be?
It is important to leave a paper trail to build your case against North Korea and North Korea's enablers. So I would welcome the next UN Security Council resolution and the one following the next North Korean provocation. But I guess, you know, a natural question that may arise from all these flurries of diplomatic activity might be, at what point does the world say enough? What is the life expectancy of diplomacy, nuclear diplomacy, and UN Security Council actions against North Korea? If the member states do not enforce them, then the toughest sounding resolution on paper will be virtually meaningless.
Sung-Yun Lee cautioned Western diplomats should not be taken in by North Korea's suggestion it will wait to launch missiles toward Guam. He said there's a long history of the perception that an easing of tensions with Pyongyang equates to a diplomatic success. He said the North Korea missile threat is credible and alarming, and tensions will persist as long as the North has an internal need to pursue nuclear weapons. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Signs of diplomacy appear as North Korea delays Guam missile test. Trump and Abe agree stopping North Korea is a top priority as the North puts off test. Monsoon rains claim dozens in Nepal, India, Bangladesh. China rights activist Wu Gan may face up to 10 years in prison. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, plus much more, on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Officials in Guam are breathing a sigh of relief after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on Tuesday announced he would wait to see how the United States responds before ordering further missile tests designed to crash into waters near the U.S. Pacific Territory. Lieutenant Governor Ray Tenorio met with reporters after the North Korean leader's remarks.
We're happy that he has taken a look at their plans, as he said, and we'll be holding off on, at least it appears, to be imminent threats to Guam at this point. There doesn't appear to be any indication that, based on what we're hearing, that there will be any missiles attacking in the near future or in the distant future.
Tenorio said he's happy the rhetoric is starting to calm down, but the island's homeland security director said there's been no change in the threat level. Guam is not only the host of a large U.S. military presence, but it has a thriving tourist industry. Tony Munya, vice president of the Guam Visitors Bureau, tells VOA tensions with North Korea have not dented the island's tourism industry, which makes up over half of its economy.
Assurances that have been given to us by, you know, our governor, our military officials, defense officials, and also, frankly, by President Trump himself, you know, we are confident that we are protected and that we are safe in any eventuality. You know, our military officials are ready to defend Guam and also the rest of the Asia-Pacific region.
Still, Munya said authorities in Guam issued preparation guidelines to the more than 163,000 residents in case of an attack.
Some of the items is, you know, what to do in the eventuality of a, you know, a nuclear threat, that, you know, there's things like, you know, stay indoors for 24 hours, hunker down, be prepared, and also, you know, things like do not use a conditioner in your hair because apparently it attracts nuclear, radiation to yourself. You know, things like taking a shower and making sure that you really scrub down, you know, so it's things that you can do in order to make sure that you're not fully exposed to the radiation.
Munya was not entirely surprised that Guam became the center of heated rhetoric between the United States and North Korea.
This is not the first time that Guam has been threatened. It was several years ago that we were threatened as well. And we did make headlines. And, you know, I think that, you know, Guam has seen this before. And, yes, it does definitely concern us every single time Guam is directly threatened. You know, but again, just the assurances that we have from our governor, our, you know, Homeland Security, defense officials, and even the White House has us a little bit more comfortable that Guam is going to be taken care of.
Tony Munya said Guam attracted 1.5 million visitors last year. He said no major cancellations have been received in recent weeks. In fact, tourism is up 7% in the first 10 days of August compared with the same period last year. And visits from South Koreans in that period are up 30% over 2016. Happening now in Asia, Prime Minister Narendra Modi marked the 70th anniversary of India's break from British colonial rule with a vow to end corruption and a plea for religious tolerance. He also proclaimed India could defend itself against any and all enemies amid a tense 2-month-long territorial dispute with China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy when you're able to spend time with us on VOA Asia. The United States top general is in China, where he signed an agreement aimed at improving communication amid tensions over North Korea's missile program and China's controversial claims in the South China Sea. Tuesday's signing of the Joint Strategic Dialogue Mechanism aims to build trust and understanding and head off any miscalculations. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with General Joe Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and spoke from Beijing with VOA's Ira Melman about the visit.
This agreement is kind of the result from the talks that President Trump and President Xi had earlier this year. Back during that time, they decided that they needed to keep the communication lines going in the event of just benefiting on several different levels. There's the diplomatic level, the security level, economic level, and even the cyber and social level. So today's signing, what the U.S. military and what the Chinese military are hoping is that this is going to create that mechanism, hold the first talks, which will be in November in D.C., and that will be among the J5, which is for strategic planning in the U.S. military at the Pentagon, and then the equivalent with the Chinese military. And they're hoping that through that, if they can work together, not necessarily cooperating, but coordinating and making sure that both sides know what they're doing, then there won't be that chance for miscalculation in the event that something horrible happens on the Korean Peninsula or that North Korea continues to act in this negative behavior.
During the trip, we know that General Dunford stopped first in Korea and then went on to China. What has been the tenor of the talks? What have been the aim of why this trip is taking place?
Well, this trip is very important to the entire region because the entire region is on high alert right now. You have in South Korea, Secretary Mattis, Secretary Tillerson sent an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal reassuring the allies. Chairman Dunford, who I'm traveling with, was reassuring the South Korean allies, saying that we're there for you. They discussed ways that they could coordinate. They talked about how the United States could respond in the event of a crisis. He's probably going to do the same thing while he's in Tokyo, speaking with his Japanese counterparts. And then in China, it's a little different shift because the Chinese are not thrilled of the U.S. presence on the Korean Peninsula. They're not thrilled that the U.S. has deployed part of its missile deterrent, THAAD, to the region. So they need to be reassured as well that all the steps that the United States are taking are not geared in any way to be against China. It's purely defensive in nature. And so I think that point was really hammered down today.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb from Beijing. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A security report by the FATA Research Center observed a decline of 19% in violent incidents during the second quarter of 2017 along the border with Afghanistan. The report also indicated that banned terror outfits were still able to carry out terrorist attacks. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. Share stories with your friends. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, a court in China has held a closed-door hearing for prominent rights activist Wu Gan, with legal observers saying a ruling in the case could be handed down in about a week. They say Wu, who is best known for his mockery of official efforts to obstruct his push for justice and his online name, The Butcher, could face up to 10 years in prison. The 44-year-old Wu rose to prominence for his unconventional advocacy campaigns that combined online speech, humorous satire, and street performance. Wu was first taken into custody in May 2015 and, 2 months later, officially charged with inciting state subversion. But his detention is believed to be tied to the July 9th crackdown on rights lawyers that began the same month. The court in Tianjin said in a post-trial statement that Wu's trial was not open to the public because, quote, state secrets were involved. According to the statement during the proceeding, Wu recognized that his behavior was a crime and that his lawyers fully presented their defense arguments. Yu Mingli, a legal assistant and close friend to Wu, says, quote, the state's hatred for him has gone off the charts. Authorities, Yu tells VOA, have long held a grudge against him because of his pursuit of illegal misconduct by local governments or public office holders and his use of cyber manhunts. His past articles in defiance of the state has also drawn the ire of the authorities. Prior to his trial, Wu said he expects, quote, a heavy sentence because of his acts of defiance, including his refusal to accept a state-appointed lawyer, plead guilty, and make a televised confession for authorities' propaganda purposes, as well as his determination to reveal police torture used on him. Wu added he's done nothing wrong but to exercise his civil rights guaranteed by the Constitution. Jerome Cohen, a law professor at New York University, called Wu's pretrial statement one of the most moving and accurate descriptions he's ever read of China's manipulation of its legal system to stamp out speech freedom. Several China-based diplomats and journalists were barred from observing the trial and even standing outside the courthouse. In response to their efforts to cover the trial, a VOA journalist and his news assistant were taken into custody at a nearby police station for questioning for nearly 5 hours. Our thanks to Joyce Wong for sending us this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, top U.S. and Chinese military officers have signed an agreement aimed at improving communication amid tensions over North Korea's missile program and China's controversial claims in the South China Sea. The Joint Strategic Dialogue Mechanism aims to build trust and understanding between the two militaries. Understand more about the day's events at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, when astronomers go looking for life on other worlds, they generally look for water. The saying goes that where there's water, there's life. VOA's Kevin Enix has found out some NASA researchers think that we may be able to expand that by saying liquid, any liquid, even methane lakes on Saturn's moon Titan.
Saturn is about 1.2 billion kilometers away from Earth, and Titan is its largest moon. Titan and Earth are unique in our solar system for one reason. They're wet. Maureen Palmer, a research associate from NASA Goddard, spoke to VOA via Skype.
Titan is interesting because it's the only body in the solar system besides Earth that has a meteorological cycle. So like our water cycle on Earth, on Titan, there's methane in lakes and evaporating and forming clouds and rain.
Standing liquid, even methane, is a good place to look for life, but not life as we know it, because methane oceans are deadly to human cells. Previous research concluded that cells based on a molecule called acrylonitrile might thrive in methane. So using a powerful new telescope, Goddard scientists went looking for it on Titan. And they found it.
On Earth, you probably haven't encountered it much. It's used in manufacturing some types of plastic. On Titan, it's been searched for a long time, but there wasn't the sensitivity that ALMA had in the past to be able to detect it.
ALMA is short for the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, a huge collection of radio telescopes located in the high and dry Atacama Desert of Chile. It's only been fully operational since 2013, and it's powerful enough to detect tiny amounts of acrylonitrile. Martin Cordner, who along with Palmer wrote the report on the findings, spoke via Skype.
So you wouldn't say that it's incredibly abundant, but it's certainly one of the more abundant trace gases in Titan's atmosphere.
And acrylonitrile is the basis for a still-theoretical cell membrane called an azotosome. Palmer and Cordner hope some enterprising biologist will create azotosomes in the lab. Once they do that, actually finding it on Titan may require a visit.
One of the great arguments for sending people to explore these environments is because they can make decisions on the fly about what samples to look, where to dig.
Don't hold your breath for a human visit, but Cordner says we could send robotic probes to Titan sometime in the next 10 years or so. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Today marks 40 years since the legendary king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, died at his home in Memphis at age 42. As VOA Asia's David Byrd tells us, fans across the world are remembering Presley, one of the pioneers of rock music.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel.
Elvis Presley took the world by storm in the 1950s, shaking and gyrating on stage, melting girls' hearts with his charismatic good looks and his curled upper lip. Elvis was born into poverty in Tupelo, Mississippi, but rose to stardom on the heels of songs like Heartbreak Hotel, Hound Dog, Blue Suede Shoes, and Love Me Tender. Elvis died of complications from drug use and heart problems on August 16, 1977. Since his death, fans have flocked to his Graceland mansion in Memphis to pay tribute to their hero. This year, fans will be able to pay nearly $29 to join the procession to the Presley family gravesite. They will also get a glimpse of the newly built entertainment complex, which replaced older exhibits featuring Elvis's cars, costumes, and memorabilia. Angela Toe is a tourist from Michigan.
It is really about the music. You know, he had so many influences. It just wasn't rock music, but it was R&B, it was blues, and he fused that naturally.
Molly Kindle and her family drove hours to see the mansion and to pay tribute to Presley.
It's crazy how busy this place is today, 40 years later. I think we probably took 4 hours to get through this tour today because of all the people. It was really nice.
Well, it's one for the morning, two for the show, three to get ready, and I go.
In Manila, the Philippines, several Elvis impersonators took to the stage to pay tribute to the music legend. Eddie Lombardo is the Elvis of Italy.
We're not trying to duplicate Elvis because nobody can be Elvis. There's only one Elvis, you know, and we're trying to bring the memory of Elvis back to people. That's basically what we're doing.
Douglas Masuda, the self-described Elvis of Japan, says he hopes to communicate the spirit of Presley's music.
So you say, oh, how do I feel, you know, when I sing? Well, I'm not Elvis. I don't look like Elvis. I probably don't sound like him, but I feel his song. So if I feel it, you feel it.
Bam Angping is described as a young Elvis sensation. He says that Presley was a groundbreaker for generations of artists.
Elvis kind of like banged down the door because everyone was so conservative before. You had Frank Sinatra, like you said. They were all so conservative, and then there's this guy shaking his hips. So that started everything, I think, for everyone.
Elvis Presley ranked fourth in Forbes magazine's 2016 list of top-earning dead celebrities. That's not bad, but it paled compared to another king, King of Pop, Michael Jackson, who earned $825 million last year. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
With you, for I can't help falling in love with you.
Amazing how fast time goes. Our time is gone as well. You've been listening to VOA Asia, and we thank everybody who is listening on Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks for stopping by. Our directors, Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. and we all wish you a very great day ahead.